Greetings to a journey where pixels meet melodies and controllers become conductors. This is Virtual Soundscapes on WJFF Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Matt Hurtado. It's spring break, and although it doesn't feel like it up here in the icy Catskills, we can still imagine a warm trip to the sunny beach together. At the end of the set, I'll speak with Kari Toyama about the video game production process, as well as the importance of QA and diversity. Now, let's get our feet sandy on the beach and hear Miami from the Hotline Miami soundtrack. This is Virtual Soundscapes on Radio Catskill. I'm Matt Hurtado. And while I may be holed up hiding from a winter storm currently, my heart is on the beach. We just heard the theme song from Grand Theft Auto Vice City and Daisuke by El Huervo from the Hotline Miami soundtrack. I saw El Huervo perform live at the Hotline Miami 2 launch party in Austin, Texas, and it brings back warmer memories for this spring break. Next up, let's continue our virtual beach party and hope to stay forever in paradise with the title theme from Paradise Killer, Stay Forever.
Come on now.
listening to a virtual spring break beach party here with me on Virtual Soundscapes. This is Radio Catskill, and I'm Matt Hurtado. That was Zach's Island from Dead or Alive 5 and Honolulu City Lights from Yakuza, Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth before that. We're going to take a quick breather, but when we return, we'll hear some more great spring break approved video game tunes, as well as an interview with Kari Toyama.
NEPA Gives starts on June 4th at 7 p.m. Show your support for Radio Catskill and other great nonprofit organizations serving Northeast Pennsylvania. You have just 24 hours to give from June 4th at 7 p.m. to June 5th at 7 p.m. So be sure to make your donation on time. You don't need a Pennsylvania zip code to donate. And every donation gets Radio Catskill closer to its $2,500 goal. Donate to Radio Catskill before 7 p.m. Friday at NEPAGives.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, ahead of the Men's World Cup, we bring you a new show from Futuro Studios. It's all about soccer culture in the U.S. and its underdog roots.
Why do I watch the World Cup? That's like asking me, why do I breed?
It's called American Football. And that's this week on Latino USA. Thursday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Virtual Soundscapes, a spring break edition here on Radio Catskill. I'm Matt Hurtado, and although I've never been on a surfboard in my life, video games have always given me the avenue to imagine that I am, in fact, a pro surfer. Let's hang tin now with the Malaysia stage music from Street Fighter V. celebrated the end of our spring break forever musical journey here on Virtual Soundscapes by having some Miami-themed night drive music from Blood Dragon, one of the best 80s-themed video game expansions ever made, starring movie star Michael Biehn as Sergeant Rex Power Colt. That was a theme from Blood Dragon and Resurrection right before it. Let's wrap this party up with an interview with Gary Toyama, formerly of Private Division, Bungie Studios, and PopCap Games. You're listening to Virtual Soundscapes on WJFF Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Matt Hurtado. Tonight, I'm joined by hockey player, video game producer, and Peggle 2 voice actress, Gary Toyama. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So, Gary, let's get started. Can you tell me what sparked your interest in video games and how that led into a career in the industry?
Yeah, so I've been playing video games my whole life, like a lot of people in the industry, since I was a little kid. The first video game I ever played was Mike Tyson's Punch-Out on, I think it was the NES. I don't think it was a Super NES, but correct me if I'm wrong. And I was in somebody's like basement, like my babysitter's basement, and her nephew was playing it with us, and it was, you know, we didn't win, but my brother and I had a blast, and we played video games ever since together. But what actually led me into the industry was kind of an accident. I was in college and studying to have like a psychology degree, and I wasn't quite sure what I was doing yet, as many young people don't know. And I had a job that was a night shift job at a grocery store, price changer. And I worked all night, and then I couldn't like go to sleep at 5 a.m. when I got home. And so I started playing Halo 2. And I realized that there was like this whole community of people like on the internet that were getting together and playing these Halo and other games as well. And I started like getting interested in that community. And that community led me to realize that the developer of Halo, which was Bungie at the time, they were in my neighborhood. And I didn't even realize that people made video games near me. So being from the community, that's how I realized like, oh, I could like, there's actual jobs that these people can have, and I could like do this for a living. And so that's kind of like what led me into the game industry in the first place. And it was really, it was honestly just through people and being in community with people that liked a thing that I liked. So
what was your, can you tell me a little bit about what your first job was at Bungie?
Yeah, I was a build verification tester, which is, and it was a contract job, just like many test and QA jobs were at the time, and honestly still are too. And so I had a 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. shift, and my job was, and there was like about 20 of us on the team, I believe. And my job was to go in super early and basically do like a smoke test on the build. So we basically would just like run through the game and just make sure nothing was like super broken, like you could actually play the game, so that the developers who came in later that morning wouldn't have any problems, you know, working on the game. There was nothing blocking them from continuing their work. So that's what I did every morning.
It's amazing. What's your favorite memory of your, I mean, either from that job or just any of your jobs in your career?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this, and I have so many, but one of the first ones, and they're all around like learning moments for me, but one early one that I thought of was, you know, I was working on Halo 3, that same job. I actually like had sort of worked my way up. I got promoted a couple of times at Bungie. And I was like an area owner tester, so that I kind of like created test plans for how to test certain areas of the game that I owned. And then I would work with the team to, you know, execute on those plans. So I had been playing the game a lot, like, you know, the public hadn't seen it yet. They've seen some previews, and there, you know, there was like, you know, some trailers and things that went out, but no one had actually seen the gameplay of the game yet. But I had a lot every single day for hours and hours. I had to play the same things over and over again to make sure that they worked properly. And to be honest with you, I was like over it at that point. I was like, this game is cool, but I'm pretty tired of playing it. and we were heading out to PAX which is a convention out here in Seattle. It's, you know, pretty much worldwide now, but at the time it was only in Seattle. And they had a segment where they basically had these people like competing with each other. And at the very end, if they got to the very end, they'd be able to like play a surprise game against each other. And then whoever won that surprise game would win. And the surprise game was Halo 3, which is the game I was working on. And, you know, people are like, this is so cool. They don't know that they're going to have get to play this. And there's they're going to make it a big deal. They had like they had it in this like theater, this like sort of theater setting. And I went and I went to the event and I was like kind of I remember rolling my eyes being like, who cares? I've been playing this game. Like, it's not going to be that cool, you know, to watch these people. Like, it'll be kind of exciting to see their reactions. But I was like kind of over it at that point. And I will never forget, like, they, you know, did this whole production where they're like, get ready, the surprise game is, and they like flashed, you know, the Halo 3 symbol on the screen, and the crowd just like lost it, and the music started pumping from the game, and you know, it like flashed on the screen, and like the two people who were about to play it were like losing their minds, and like, you know, lights were everywhere, and it was just like the most incredible moment. And I had heard that music so many times. You know, when you play, when you work on a game, you get so sick of like, especially the opening music, it gets really tiring. And I heard that music and like my heart just like stopped. I just like was so excited. And I remember, I always remember this moment because I remember that there's no matter how hard you work on something and like, you know, maybe you're just like really stressed and tired and you're not even sure if people are going to like it. There's always going to be a moment like that in the games that you work on. And every single game I've worked on since has had that moment where I realize like people are really going to love this thing that I'm working on and I'm doing it for a reason. And it's like a really big deal. And so, yeah, that was one of my favorite moments working in games.
That sounds super awesome. That's really rewarding.
Yeah.
So you've had an incredible career, Carrie. You started off, you know, as a build test engineer, which is, you know, part of a greater QA department. And you went on to champion QA and diversity in games, you know, with your work at Private Division, where you basically built the QA department there. Can you elaborate on why QA and diversity are such crucial aspects of the game development industry?
Yeah, of course. I love talking about this and I love it when people ask me about it because I think it's like really important for people to speak up when they especially for those who like don't have, you know, as big as a voice. And I certainly didn't have one when I was, you know, younger and first started in the industry. So, I mean, you know, to briefly sort of talk about why I even care about these things in the first place is because of my experience in video games. You know, I you know, talking about how I loved working on Halo and I was so excited to work, you know, on Halo 3 when I, you know, broke into the industry. But it was really tough for me. I was always the only woman in the room. You know, I was super young. I think I was 22 when I started. So, you know, I'm still like, you know, basically a child. Like I'm just learning how to be an adult at this point. And I was, you know, in an industry that I didn't know. And it was a professional, you know, setting that I wasn't, you know, really familiar with. And I had to, and I wanted to keep my job. I really enjoyed what I was doing. And because of that, I had a lot of experiences that today, if I were to experience them, they were very negative and I would speak up today in a heartbeat. But at the time I didn't know, I felt like, if I spoke up for myself, then they would just fire me. And I think a lot of people, you know, felt like that. And I saw that happen to people. So I was like, I want to stay here. And I would like to continue working on this really cool game. And I think I really like this job. And so, you know, there were multiple reasons why, you know, I was treated the way I was. But a lot of them were because, you know, I was a woman. And that coming to that realization, it took me a long, long time to come to that realization. I didn't really understand what was going on until I was a lot older and sort of like could take a step back and look at what had happened to me with a different sort of like setting. And then I realized that I always had this sort of fire in me. Like, I wasn't going to just, like, you know, let this happen to other people, for surely not the other people. Like, you know, I sort of have, like, learned to, like, have thick skin. But then I realized, like, watching it happen to other people around me, I was like, no, this isn't the way. This isn't the way that it should be. So I really started to speak up. And when I started to speak up, what I realized was that people weren't firing me because I was really good at my job. And I was dedicated, and I was all those buzzwords. I was a team player. You know, I worked hard. You know, I was always there, and I did really good work. So they didn't want to fire me. And because otherwise they would lose a really good, you know, person that they worked with. So I started to speak up more, and sort of little by little. It didn't happen overnight. Kind of had to pick my battles. By the time I became, sort of like had a senior role in the industry, which took, I would say, like about like 7 years to have like a real or to feel like I was truly in a senior role. That was at the point where I was like, I am going to make this my mission at this point. So I'm going to continue to do my work and love my job and, you know, be a team player. But I'm also not going to turn away from, you know, from these issues that I feel like the industry has, and a lot of industries have them. But, you know, I was like, this is the one that I like, and I want to stay here, and I want to make a difference. Even if it's a small difference, I'm still going to do it. So I basically, you know, continue to speak up. And the thing that I like to do personally, and not everybody likes to do this, but I personally like to take what I call a sort of like grassroots approach to diversity and inclusion. And that means that I don't necessarily need this big a program, or I don't need, like, you know, I don't need like a lot of buy-in from stakeholders and things like that. I know I'm losing a lot of buzzwords, but that's what they are. You know, a lot of people think that they need to have a whole program in order to get things done. Especially in this space. For me, I like to start with like, hey, what's going on here on a personal level, and work with people around me who are maybe are facing these issues or things that I have faced in the past, and then sort of like go from there. And when we take it step by step, one thing at a time. Hopefully that makes sense. I kind of feel like I'm kind of going around in circles here, but I guess what I'm saying is I made it my mission, and then I made sure that whatever I was doing had action, like real action. And the way that I achieve that is by really getting personal with people and starting small, and then slowly building that up to be more grand gestures or programs, or, you know, things that an entire company would adopt, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Sorry. I'll cut this part. Okay. Well, we're just going to talk for a second here, and then we'll back into the interview. So that was great. Did you want to talk a little bit about QA next?
Yes. I was like trying to tie that in, but then I got worried that I was going on and on. So, let me just hold on. Let me second here.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah. Let me, I'm trying to figure out like a good, like, way to start it off.
I can lead you into it if you want. I can say, you know, that was great. So can you tell me a little bit more about the QA part of this?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that. And I think I'm good from there.
Okay, cool. I'm going to clap real quick just so I know where to come back in. Okay. That's great, Carrie. Okay, now, damn it, I fucked it up again.
It's okay.
See, this is great. It's not live.
I know, so good, right?
Right. All right, here we go. That makes a lot of sense. How do you think that QA is impactful to the industry, and what do you, man, I just really need to, like, I didn't write this question down this way, sorry.
I know.
All right, I'm gonna do one more time, one more go. All right, I'm just gonna say, how do you think QA is impactful to the industry?
Yeah.
That was great information, Carrie. How do you think QA is impactful to the industry?
Yeah. So this all kind of ties into what I was talking about before. So QA, or quality assurance or test, or however, you know, you want to call it, that is a discipline in the game industry that is very often thought of as sort of like the bottom of the barrel, and I really hate that term, but that's kind of like what people think of it, or they'll talk about it as. And and a lot of people talk about it as a they describe it as a way to, like a stepping stone into the industry. And so it's sort of like, hey, you get this QA job, you become a tester, and then like then you can become an artist, and then you can work your way up to become an engineer. And while I actually believe that that is true, and that can absolutely be a way to further your career, and it's actually mostly what I did as well. It doesn't have to be like that, but people are treated that way. That's sort of like the way that people just think of it as this sort of lower level, this perpetual like lower level, experience. And it's not, and it doesn't have to be. There are lower level positions within the QA departments in various studios, but that doesn't mean that that is the only way to get, to make more money and be promoted and have a like long lasting career in the industry. So oftentimes what happens is, you get folks who are in other disciplines or have been at the company for much longer, and they treat people in QA very poorly, and really poorly. And I have been there, have seen all of it, and I've experienced almost all of it. And so I don't believe that that is the way that we should be treating any discipline within our industry. All the way from HR, to, the head of the studio. Every person that works on a video game that has an impact on the studio that is making that video game is a game developer. They're all equal. And some people may have more experience than others, but that doesn't mean that they don't have, an equal part in the game that they're making. And I believe that just in general, that we should be treating people with respect on a mutual level. And when that is not happening at a company or in a studio or even on a team, then that's when the team dynamics get imbalanced and things go really poorly. I don't see, any way that that could be positive, and I have not experienced that in a positive way. So my approach has always been to advocate for QA because I believe that people should be respected equally across our, across our industry. Because just because somebody is in a different discipline doesn't mean that they can't, that they're not contributing to the game that I'm making, and also that they can't contribute to something that I am working on. So yeah, that's, I feel very strongly about it, and I also really am so proud of the career that I have had and have continued to have in QA. I'm really proud of it.
I absolutely agree. QA is vital, and anyone who contributes to making a game is should consider themselves like equal part of the game development process. So with all that in mind, Carrie, reflecting on your experience, what advice would you have for someone wanting to break into the industry today?
Yeah, this is the hardest question I ever have to answer. And I think it's hard for everybody, right? And I think everybody has like different answers, and I think that's really cool. I mean, for me, I think that my advice is that there is nothing you can't do if you don't, if you want it, then you can do it. And there will likely be barriers. If there aren't barriers, then that's probably a red flag, actually. But there will likely be barriers, and but those barriers can, you can overcome those barriers. And if it's something that your gut and your soul is telling you that this is what you want to do, or this is the industry that you want to be in, then absolutely do not give up on that, on that feeling. And make the friends that you make along the way in the industry or outside of the industry, really be an observer and pay attention to people who you look up to. Those types of people have really made my career, the successful career that it is because I have observed people that I want to be like, and I've watched how their career has progressed. Whether they're my mentor or not, I'm still observing them. And they have made me successful. Like that, those observations and the lessons that I have learned, have made me successful. And every time I thought that something was completely out of reach, in time, I realized that it wasn't. I just had to, keep working and keep moving towards that goal, and it was absolutely achievable. And if I had really known that when I was younger, I think I probably would have achieved my goals a lot faster. So I think we could all use that advice, even if we're not, like just breaking into the industry.
Absolutely. Kerry Toyama, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for being on the show tonight.
Likewise, thank you so much for having me. This is so fun.
You're listening to Virtual Soundscapes on WJFF Radio Catskill.
This concludes the Virtual Soundscapes Spring Break Party on WJFF Radio Catskill. I'm Matt Hurtado. I hope you enjoyed our beach-themed tunes tonight, and if you'd like to hear the full uncut interview with Kerry or any of our previous guests, you can find it online at wjffradio.org/podcasts or any of your favorite podcast apps. Please tune in next week on Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern for more great video game music and another interview.
Ira Flatow here from Science Friday. We view sci-fi as a refreshing break from the daily bombardment of political news. You know, there's lots of important and interesting science and technology out there. Whether it's the deep, dark mysteries of the universe or your deep, dark microbiome, it's all right here. So start your weekends with thought-provoking news on Radio Catskill.
On this old house radio hour, hard water is destroying your hair, your skin, and pipes. Here's how to fix it.
It just has a filter inside of the neck of the fixture that's just filtering out that calcium and magnesium as it can.
Plus, author Ann Patchett on the wild, unforgettable Tennessee home of her childhood. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour.
Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.